Hi, and welcome back to the Leading Language and Literature Podcast with me, Chris Jordan. In this episode, I'm talking to Sarah Cottingham. Sarah is Associate Dean at Ambition Institute, author of Al Chappell's Meaningful Learning in Action, a professional development consultant, and a former English teacher. I was really eager to speak with Sarah after reading her work about Al Chappell's theory and applying it to recent discussions about how English can be approached in a more conceptual manner. Added to this is the requirement that every subject be approached conceptually within the IB framework, but with limited practical guidance at times in terms of how to implement such a curriculum. We discuss what a subsumer is and how secondary departments should plan with them in mind, what the subsumers Sarah believes we should teach secondary school English students are, what Sarah thinks of the IB MYP key concepts, related concepts, and global contexts, how an English subsumer could be fed with detail over the course of a secondary education, what an advanced organizer is, and finally, how subsumers interact with retrieval practice. Thanks so much to Sarah for giving up her time to discuss this brilliantly written book in more detail, as well as her wider contribution to the conceptual teaching discussion. If you want to be kept up to date on when educational chat like this happens, then be sure to subscribe to the podcast and or follow me on Twitter at Chris Jordan HK. So, as I just said before we started recording, I think this Al Chappell's theory, I think it's a really beautifully written book, very concise, as all the books are in this particular series. But I think, you know, your kind of treatment of it is really, really good, so useful. I don't want you to kind of explain the entire theory and what its implications for kind of teachers, because that's kind of what the book's for. But there is a couple of things that I highlighted, which I think can set the tone or kind of give us like a bit of a, you know, an introduction into it. And one of them is the quotes, which I think I read this quote somewhere, or I at least had it said to me, you know, 15 years ago when I started being a teacher. And that was like, this is taken from the introduction of the book, but the most important single factor influencing learning is what the learner already knows. Ascertain this and teach him accordingly. So that's a direct quote, I assume, from Al Chappell. Mm-hmm. I remember hearing that at the time and thinking, well, yeah, obviously I'll go in and work out what they do and don't know and just get on with it. Mm-hmm. And I think over time, like, you realize how silly that kind of reading of that particular quote is, because there's obviously far wider implications for curriculum design with regard to, you know, what that quote actually means. And I'm kind of skipping forward in the book here, but in the summary to part one, you kind of talk about how, like, bodies of knowledge are the end goal, and they ideally develop around what you refer to as concepts and propositions. That you should teach the more generalized ideas first, and then students can learn the detail by assimilating, you know, more generalized ideas to form a body of knowledge most efficiently. This is called subsumptive learning. And correct me if I'm wrong, but this is something which I think as an English teacher, I feel like I came across when I read David Dardow's work and Sam Gibbs' work, Zoe Hellman's work around English. So my first question is, like, after stating that idea of subsumptive learning, you then use the term subsumer. What is a subsumer to you, and how should secondary departments plan with them in mind?
Yeah, so I think that was a really good summary there.
Thank you.
I'm glad you felt the book was kind of clear on that. There's lots of terms that Chappell uses, and he's never talking specifically about one particular subject. So what you're sort of cleverly trying to do, Chris, is like think about how this applies to English. So I guess like in this podcast, we're going to kind of work together to try to figure that out a little bit, because Al Chappell doesn't tell us exactly how it works in different subjects. This is just his theory of how meaningful learning happens, which is the type of learning that he thinks we should be aiming for with our students, because that's what develops these like rich bodies of knowledge that allow them to recall lots of different important ideas in all the subjects that they learn. So you talked about a subsumer. So I kind of like to think of a subsumer as being a little bit like a planet with a kind of gravitational pull. And the subsumer is like a really important idea, and the other details are kind of like hanging around in its orbit. And that's not a perfect metaphor by any means, not a metaphor that Azubel uses, but it's just how visually I'm sort of thinking of it. So if we think about the fact that in English we can't teach everything, we've got these texts that are so rich often that we could teach lots and lots of different angles of this, of the text. The idea behind the subsumers is, I guess, is that we are picking what we decide, and obviously this is subjective, but what we decide are like the most important ideas, those like big concepts, I guess. And they're the big concepts that we want students to learn, usually like throughout their time with us. So here in the UK, we've got obviously year we'll be going to secondary school, we've got year 7 to year 11, then sixth form, obviously primary school goes up to year 6, and we're kind of thinking like what are those key ideas that we want to develop over time, and our subsumers kind of speak to those key concepts. For example, we might choose things like tyranny, democracy, love, ideas like that, and there are planets. And then the rest of the detail, the topics we choose and the angles we kind of take when we're teaching texts, the ideas within the text that we highlight are kind of feeding that concept. They're feeding the understanding of that wider concept.
Mm.
And Azubel kind of, from a memory perspective, is talking about subsumers because he believes that that's what helps to anchor our knowledge of the more detailed stuff. So if we just teach the detail straight away and get into the nitty gritty, kids have got nothing to hang it on.
Mm.
But if we start by kind of introducing these bigger ideas, these bigger concepts, then what we're doing is we're giving them something to anchor the detail on. And an idea to develop over time.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a really nice analogy. Like, I think the analogy that I've come across before is like the idea of boxes. But I think the planet is far more kind of sophisticated, or like at least it's a much more visually appealing one. Particularly like you're talking about the idea that we might teach them something which we deem to be relevant to the subject, but if it's just an island, like you refer to it in the book as like an island of knowledge, the students may, you know, understand it, remember it for a bit, but ultimately lose it or not fully comprehend its significance because it's so isolated and disconnected. It's not in the orbit, to use the kind of the analogy of like the planet, of like a bigger concept. You mentioned a few then, so like the idea of tyranny and love and things like that. My second question was like, what are the subsumers? And this is, you know, really, really tricky question, I appreciate, but what are the subsumers you believe we should teach secondary school English students? Those ones like tyranny and love, again, I've got to be careful what I refer to them as, but I suppose they could be described as like substantive concepts or transdisciplinary concepts, that you could talk about love in a few different disciplines, not just English. So where do you stand on that kind of discussion around the subsumers should teach secondary English kids?
I'm going to have to bounce this one back to you, Chris. This is one of those. Like, I was an English teacher and have worked as a teacher educator for about 8 years now. And I don't want to kind of assume that I have a good opinion on this. What would you say? I guess like one thing we have to preface this by saying, and I think your a previous guest of yours was talking about this as well, Julie Stern, was kind of the grain size of these concepts, and like we don't want them to be too big, such that like everything fits under them and nothing really means anything anymore. But we don't want them to be too granular, such that they don't capture a lot of the details. So they kind of have to sit in this sweet spot, which is easier said than done. I also think they're kind of negotiated over time. I don't know if you agree with this, Chris, but they're there might be some right now that we think are really important.
Yeah.
And then over time, on a lengthy teaching career, we might see that these change. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I have thought about this a lot recently, and I think there's two strands to this. Like, one is what I'm kind of not forced to do, but almost kind of mandated to do because of, like, I work as an IB, NYP, DP, whatever, teacher, and that is a conceptually driven curriculum. And then there's my personal sort of beliefs in it. So, like, if I am very, very tempted by the sort of David Dardow model. So I, like, from memory, he talked about the six kind of key concepts being structure. I think he referred to it as pattern, but pattern, story, argument, context, grammar, and I cannot remember what the other one was. Oh, metaphor. And it sounds churlish to say it, given like his incredible kind of experience with, you know, inside of schools, outside of schools and stuff. For me, metaphor, I've like wrestled with it a lot, and I've looked at the way that David has done it. I think metaphor sits more, you know, sometimes it sits within story and sometimes it sits within argument. I can't see how it kind of lives alongside the other five. But I also am really conscious of the fact of something that you said a moment ago, which is in 10 years' time, yeah, some of these might have amalgamated themselves into one big one. One of them might have split into two, like as we talk about it more. So I'm conscious of that. But that's where I stand on it. I do believe in bringing in the whatever you want to call them, transdisciplinary substantive concepts. But I think they're just so varied. I think what we're talking about there when we talk about like tyranny and love or friendship is basically the human condition. And it's almost an endless conversation about which ones to choose, so to speak. Like if you're teaching in an all boys school, is it too simplistic to say we should do masculinity? Whereas like if you were teaching in like a school that has primarily a certain kind of demographic of students, should you be covering certain, you know, transdisciplinary concepts with them, blah blah blah. But so that is my answer. If I was setting up a department, they're the five that I would kind of base it around, but with obviously those transdisciplinary things as well. But coming back to what you said about Julie Stern, yeah, I'll kind of do something. I'll pitch to you like what the IB asks of us with regard to like curriculum design. Because I shared the same ones with her and kind of got her feedback on it. So when we're setting up a unit of study in NYP, we're asked to choose between four key concepts, a number of related concepts, I think there's 12. And a lot of global contexts. Global contexts are basically what I would call like transdisciplinary concepts. So things like the information age. So the related concepts, there's 12 of those. They're things like character, style, structure, things like that. But the key concepts, I think, are the things which I have the biggest problem with. So the four key concepts are perspective, communication, creativity, and connections. So how do you, like, if I put them to you, like, Sarah, how do they sound to you as kind of subsumers within English as a discipline? Like the idea of creativity, perspective, connection, communication, are they, I don't know, what's your immediate sort of like reaction to them?
Well, you've already said that you're not particularly happy with them. I trust you because you're... no, that's fine. That's helpful for me.
A lead in the witness, so to speak.
That's fine. It's, I guess, like, it... I guess some of this stuff is for us, right, to organise our curriculum. And then some of this stuff is for students, to communicate with students and the way that we communicate with students. And if all this stuff lives on a curriculum document and never gets communicated with students because it's too complicated, not understood by teachers or just like, yeah, just hasn't made its way into people's teaching, then it's all kind of nonsense and doesn't really make sense anyway. But if it can be meaningfully communicated rather than not like a, you know, oh, today there's a bit about perspective and there's a, I put the word perspective on a slide and kids are supposed to pick up that this feeds into a particular concept, then, you know, if it can, it has to, they have to be meaningful, like, for want of a better way of putting it. So it sounds as if what you've said is, what you've said, it feels like a lot, what you've said. And it feels like those kind of big ones are maybe too big. Like, I don't know what isn't creative, you know, what doesn't fit within there. And I guess what we've got to think about is like, and what Azubel tries to think about in the book is, it's not just about the concepts. We're deliberately feeding the concepts to build a body of knowledge. Like, what is that body of knowledge that we want? What do we want them to understand about creativity? What do we want them to understand about perspective? And I think that's kind of like more the planning backwards element of it. If we start with the concepts, we sort of, it's useful, but for a planning exercise, like, what is the body of knowledge we're actually wanting them to get to? And how do you feel those kind of four key concepts help with that?
I think there's an argument to be made around, like, perspective is certainly like an aspect of English where there's maybe kind of like quite sort of, I don't know, not edges or borders or boundaries, but you can at least kind of say, by the end of, like, if you study from year 7 all the way through to year 12, they can broaden their like knowledge of perspective in quite a meaningful way. But for things like creativity, connection, communication, it's just too broad. And I think another issue is the fact that, like, you can't have a, I think I completely agree with what you said, that you have to try and define what exactly the body of knowledge is that you want the students to take away at the end of it. And as long as you're all having the same, if you're all coming from the same direction, so to speak, about what it is that you're teaching, then that's great. But the problem is, I just feel like those three are a bit of a non-starter. I think there's an opportunity cost there to, if you're talking about communication, I think because it's so broad and because it's so vague, you're inevitably going to lose like opportunities to teach things that are a little bit more granular. So it's interesting to then look at like the related concepts. So for example, the related concepts might be character, setting, genre. Like, these things are very definitive. Like, you can't really kind of go that off-piste with regard to character. And I think you can kind of plot something from year 7 all the way through to year 13 with regard to, okay, so we're going to teach, you know, what is, you know, a kind of a classic hero in the Greek, Roman, you know, Mesopotamian mold. Maybe contrast that with heroic stories from around the world. You can look at like anti-heroes. You can look at characters that kind of are typical of certain genres, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like there's an infinite, maybe not infinite, but probably an insurmountable amount of knowledge to kind of hope to transmit in a 6-7 year secondary school course. But I do think those things are slightly more kind of targeted or slightly more kind of clear, specific, so to speak, with regard to facilitating those conversations around like how to develop the curriculum. I think I've been to sort of IB workshops and things like that, and we'll have a conversation about, okay, what does communication mean to you? And for, if there's 20 different people, there's 20 different answers. And I think whilst that's nice and whilst it's kind of an example of how like students can, or like different departments, different places around the world can bring their own sense of meaning to that particular concept. I think as a discipline, the opportunity cost is just a bit too high, in my opinion. And I think even within the related concepts, some of them even are not explicitly clear. So I think one of them is point of view. Another one is self-expression. And one of the key concepts that I mentioned before is perspective. And that to me is a day-long conversation already. Like, what is the difference between perspective, point of view, and self-expression? Like, if you read the descriptors in the back of the IBMYP sort of principles into practice, there's a lot of overlap. So I think that's one tricky thing. Like, the advice that I would always give is the exact same that you've previously mentioned, which is you've got to make sense of it in your own kind of context. But I do think it's worth having the conversation as a discipline around, you know, what are you doing over there in terms of concepts, rather than it being this kind of idea of, you know, it's up to you to kind of make meaning yourselves, because that can take years, like years and years and years. And depending on the makeup of your department, I think some schools have a stronger kind of appreciation of it than others. So I think that's tricky. I would go back to the David Dyadal, Sam Gibbs, Zoe Hellman one. And I know that they're slightly different in terms of the way that they interpreted it, but there's a lot of overlap in regard to like their interpretation of it. And for me, yeah, I think I would always go back to structure. I know that David Dyadal calls it pattern, but I think I would call it structure, story, argument, context, and grammar. But when those two books came out, like, to what extent did they resonate with you, the things that they had chosen?
Yeah, I think it showed what you can do. It in relation to Azubel's work, it kind of like exposed holes in the fact that he, you know, a general theory can't speak to specific subjects, and that what we want to take probably from his theory are ideas such as the power of subsumers, and take them into our subjects, all different subjects, and think about how might that work in my subject, does it work, and do what you've done, which is really think very hard. And you have you're not just thinking hard about it, you're playing with it day to day in your classroom. What's working, what's not working, what do I have an understanding of, what seems like it overlaps so much that it needn't be two different things. And I suppose the possible downside that I'm kind of hearing is that we perhaps get a bit too hung up on the concepts that are prescribed to us, and we're trying to make sense of them so much in ways that maybe don't make sense to us, that we do need a little bit of flexibility with them. But not too much, as you say, to sort of leave people to flounder, to say, you know, well, teach whatever you want, teach whichever concepts you like, because even though that autonomy sounds lovely, it's actually very stressful to kind of design in that way. So having books like the ones you've mentioned, from people who think very hard about this stuff and do it day to day, is really, it's really important, I think. And it takes Azubel's work to the next level, as it does with all theories of learning that are quite general, need people to come in who are with a subject specific lens and think about how it translates, if it translates to their subject.
Oh yeah, and for what it's worth, I am led to understand that like there's meant to be a bit of a revamp with regard to IB, and the MYP and DP and all those things, and they're nothing if not kind of reflective and adaptive and things like that. So it'll be interesting, I think, in 2025 to see like how they've changed that up, so to speak. But certainly, if I was given the choice initially, they're the five that I would experiment with. So with that in mind, am I right to kind of assume and feel free to completely shoot me down on this, but like, if we're to then apply this to like a year 7 to 13, you know, progressive curriculum, what have you, if we were teaching something like structure, as a concept, and we're looking at, you know, structure in poetry, structure in novels, structure in plays, structure when a student writes an essay in terms of how they're constructing an argument, or structure in a speech they're writing, or what have you, is it kind of fair to assume that you return to it all the way through, like from year 7 to year 13? Is that the idea? Or is it that at some point, you know, they fall away and are replaced by something else, or they evolve, or like how, I mean, using the kind of planet analogy, I would assume that they stay and just yet more and more things come into their orbit. Have I interpreted that correctly?
Yeah. If we think about it cognitively from Azrabel's perspective, what would happen is that that naive idea of what structure is in, let's say, you know, your first year of secondary school, should evolve as it's fed with more information, as you learn about the different structures of text, that things are structured deliberately for a particular effect, and how that can cause the reader to, you know, think and feel differently about particular characters, scenarios, etc. As that's fed over time through different areas of the curriculum, that that planet almost grows, evolves into something a bit different, such that when that student is thinking about structure in year 9, it means something different to them than it did in year 7. So you would keep returning to it with just like the sort of simple things that I think about and that I kind of like to do when I work with teachers now rather than kids, is to like get them to talk about what things remind them of. Like, this reminds me of something we studied in year 7. This reminds me of something that we, in that topic. And for Azrabel, it's all about making links. It's all about those connections to what you already know. And that's what makes meaning. So it's about not, we want to avoid the tokenistic kind of just putting the word structure up on the board and hoping that they connect it to a structure of the poem they looked at, you know, last week. We want to be getting them to make those links themselves, to meaningfully process what you're talking about. I think you're like, yeah, that kind of reminds me of that thing that we did last lessons there. Like, is that similar? No, that's similar in this way, but it's different in this way. It's having a different effect. And that is what is progressively building the understanding of that particular concept.
Okay. And so with that in mind, like, how does this relate to what you referred to in the book as an advance organizer?
So we kind of go back to Azrabel's assumption that these concepts are what anchor the detail. They're how we remember things meaningfully. We've got these concepts and we make connections between the detail we're learning and the particular concept. So what he says is a kind of most efficient and best way to learn is to introduce these concepts in a meaningful way to start with. So rather than going straight in at the detailed end, we would concretely talk about these bigger concepts. So an example I give in the book, which is a very simple example and, you know, it's just one example, is when you're studying Macbeth, is to like talk about what we mean by ambition to start with. So this bigger idea of ambition. And we don't talk about it is technically a more general concept because it's more general than the specific details of what Macbeth does. But we introduce it in a concrete, meaningful way to our students. And so we know, you know, what age our students are, we've got a sense of what they seem to know. We might talk about ambition in terms of sport, in terms of politics or whatever it is. And we could introduce the idea that ambition is healthy in many ways, but also can be unhealthy. So we're giving them this lens. This concept becomes the lens through which they need to view the book. The play. So then we always a mistake that kids make, isn't it? So then when we start, you know, watching the play, reading the play out loud, then students are connecting the details to this particular concept. Now you can see there are both like plus sides and downsides to this. The plus sides are we're giving them a useful lens to see the book. It might help make things far more meaningful. It creates could create kind of curiosity around, like, you know, what's going to happen. But also, if we give them certain concepts to view the book through, we're also neglecting other concepts. We can't teach everything. So that's where it comes back to what you were saying, Chris, about this kind of like negotiation about what these concepts are. What are these important ideas that we want to focus on? Mm. And we kind of have to be a bit disciplined with ourselves. If we are finding it confusing to look through all this, these different lenses at a text, our students are not going to be able to do that. So, but just looping back to what an advanced organizer is it's giving them that lens through which to see. And Azubel, I really like the way he puts this. He calls it kind of cognitively preparing students for what they're about to hear. And it kind of reminded me of when I was at university and I, you know, might have been out drinking the night before and I've shown up to my lecture and I kind of I don't know what it's on. I don't know what's going on. I'm kind of sitting there and I'm a bit like all the details like washing over me. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm just not mentally prepared for this. I feel almost a bit shocked by the information. I'm just like, I can't cope with this. What these advanced organizers doing, it's us setting out our stall. It's us saying, like, these are the ideas that you need to have in mind when you're listening to all this detail, and it's going to help you to understand it. It's going to help you to organize what I'm about to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I see advanced organizers. Just to say, in a more practical sense, they can be kind of graphical. So they could be like an image if you're trying to show like relationships between things. They can be verbal, they can be written. So there's lots of different ways that you can present an advanced organizer in different subjects and different topics. You might want to do it differently.
That to me kind of speaks to the advantage of maybe like if someone was to argue the idea of like, okay, a theme or like transdisciplinary concept, whatever, like masculinity or kind of, I can't think of another theme, like a hopeful future or something like that, you know, something you would build a unit around. That seems much easier to do for me. Like you gave the example there and in the book of like ambition. That seems much easier to do in terms of an advanced organizer than, let's say, well, first of all, if you're saying that you're going to do all of those things like story, argument, context, blah, blah, like grammar, it's tricky. Like, I think it'd be really difficult to kind of have an advanced organizer that not only prompted all four things or all five things or six things, depending on how many you had, but also to do it in a way which was, you know, visually kind of compelling or just compelling in any sense. So I do think that we tend to do that anyway, weirdly. It kind of, not to sound too glib, but like when we have like a unit in NYP, we will tend to sort of set up the first or second lesson almost not necessarily hide in the disciplinary aspects of the unit, but it will be much more kind of geared towards that thematic idea of like if it's something about sustainability, we'll kind of look at like, you know, how sustainable are you? How sustainable is the school? How blah, 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 blah. You know, that kind of like getting them ready to think about that particular idea first. Mm. But yeah, that definitely rang true with me in terms of like gripping, like gone are the days where you would just say, right, we'll start a new book. It's called Lord of the Flies. Have a look at the front cover. Why do you think it's got this front cover? Let's read the first chapter. It's like those, you know, I think those days, thankfully, kind of in my own practice have moved on a little bit. I'm not saying I wouldn't do those activities. I probably would, but I'd definitely preface it with, like you say, the idea of, you know, what is democracy? Like, why is democracy so much better in society than other forms of kind of organization? Should we have democracy in the classroom? Why yes, why no? Blah, blah, blah. That seems like, yeah, I completely agree. That's a much more useful way to access a particular text or access a particular unit. My last question though for you, Sarah, is like the idea of like subsumers, so these big concepts, whether you do it with creativity perspective, if you have those key concepts in IB and you love them, or you do a more kind of disciplinary thing like structure or context, that kind of thing, or transdisciplinary and or transdisciplinary like love, how does all this relate to retrieval practice? I know retrieval practice isn't kind of the be all and end all, but it's certainly kind of like a strategy and intervention, whatever, that has come to prominence like in the last sort of 5-10 years, something like that, and the evidence is really compelling, both in, you know, the theory of it and also the lived experience of it. In your opinion, is it possible for conceptual knowledge to be revisited in an isolated manner for English? Or is this purely the concern of like details or skills in the unit?
So I think, yeah, I agree with you about retrieval practice, clearly very powerful from the research in terms of kind of consolidating memory and things like that. There is a bit of what some people would say is a lethal mutation where people are just getting students to retrieve isolated ideas. Yeah. And this doesn't really seem to fit with English as a domain, I don't think. I don't want to talk about other subjects because I don't want to kind of suggest I know anything about other subjects. But it doesn't seem to fit with this idea of building bodies of knowledge at all. What it does kind of fit with is Ajibel's idea of like always starting with what people already know. Mm. And how kind of neuroscience has sort of developed that idea is really shown us that if we activate certain kind of prior knowledge that people have, it's far easier to develop it. So if we use a kind of building analogy, it's, you know, it's those kind of, you activate it, then you can kind of create more, build on top of it, essentially. In reality, memory doesn't work like that. In reality, when you retrieve something, it's changed already. Mm. But just sticking with that building analogy for a second, so it's much easier to build upon knowledge if you kind of activated it, it's warmed up in students' minds. So if, like, a lot of schools in the UK are kind of doing these this sort of do now activities, starter activities, where they get students to retrieve certain ideas. How this, and Ajibel never talked about retrieval practice, by the way, but if he was alive and if he was talking about it, he would say that it must be in relation to the lesson. Like the stuff that they retrieve can't be, you know, unrelated stuff and then we cut the activity and then we start the lesson. Because what we want to do is we want to activate that prior knowledge to then build upon it. So it's perfectly reasonable for a teacher, I guess, then to think, well, you know, we are going to be talking about democracy today because we are starting Lord of the Rings. Like, where, what have we done that, what have they learned that's kind of related to democracy that they could retrieve at the beginning of my lesson to sort of warm that up? And it might be that it's a kind of cross subject thing and it's something from history that they're retrieving to kind of warm up that idea of democracy that I then build upon in the lesson. So it could, you can get them to retrieve ideas that are related to the concept that you're then going to develop, might be a kind of nice way of putting it, rather than like individual facts about things that are perhaps unrelated to what you're about to talk about.
I think this would be, again, at the risk of kind of talking about other subjects when I have no knowledge or very limited knowledge of them, like listening to sort of Craig Barton and Ollie Lovell and people like that, obviously they would refer to this as like a prerequisite check for understanding that a subject like maths and science really relies upon, in terms of it being, you know, a hierarchical structure of concepts and you know, understandings and things like that. So even as you were explaining that, then I could kind of see it playing out in my mind in terms of, well, if you're moving on to structure in that particular genre, it would be remiss really not to do some kind of retrieval practice on a form of structure that you might have looked at 6 weeks ago or 6 months ago even, or something like that. I think, yeah, that lethal mutation of, if you're just kind of retrieving it for retrieving's sake, then obviously that is a silly thing to do. But yeah, I think, yeah, I can see how there would be quite a strong relationship between the conceptual, the growing conceptual understanding, and those little kind of retrieval practice activities that can be done at some point in the lesson. So yeah, one final question I have for you is, did I say Lord of the Flies or Lord of the Rings before?
Oh gosh, I think you said Lord of the... Did I say Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
Can I just say, my son's going through a sleep regression and I'm really sorry. I want to say to anyone listening that I've apologized massively for all of the errors that I've made.
No, it's a lot of democracy in Lord of the Rings as well, I think. There's a lot of democracy there. Servant leadership.
No, that's all right. I had the island in my head, so I was definitely thinking Lord of the Flies and saying Lord of the Rings. Sorry.
That's okay. The only thing that remains for me to say, Sarah, is thank you very much for giving up your time today. As I've said before, or as I said previously, I think, you know, it's not domain specific, but English teachers are definitely at an advantage in recent years with regard to the sort of books that are being published and the kind of conversations that are happening about the subject from a conceptual standpoint. I think this is a must read for like every teacher, particularly English teachers, but even more particularly if you're an IB, MYP teacher, or like a teacher of any curriculum where it's based around concept-based learning. I think it's absolutely imperative to read it. I think it's such an interesting theory, and it's communicated really, really well. So thank you for your time today, and thank you for writing the book.
Thank you. I'm so glad that you found it useful, Chris, and thanks for having me on.